And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
This is the Athletics Football GM Podcast.
Cut, five, 85, ready, cut.
And now, the Athletics Mike Sando and former NFL Executive of the Year Randy Mueller.
Welcome to this post-Super Bowl edition of the Football GM Podcast. Mike Sando here, along with Randy Mueller again. Good morning, Randy. How are you?
Doing great, Mike. Good morning to you. Ready to roll, man. I'm sad that this is our last football podcast, you know?
Yeah, and additional sad news breaking quickly this morning with the passing of Marty Schottenheimer, 200 career victory coach. We were going to talk about that. We're going to lead off the podcast. We just got word of that as we're recording. We want to talk about the Carson Wentz situation today, some additional quarterback dominoes. The Hall of Fame voting came in over the weekend with a five-member class there and three contributors. We're going to talk about that. The Super Bowl, by the way, oh yeah, that happened over the weekend too. We'll have some of the fallout there. Certainly a lot to talk about. And then our Ask the GM question really deals with team building this offseason with the cap, the salary cap potentially going down. So, Randy, Marty Schottenheimer, 200 career victories, 21 seasons as a head coach, only two losing seasons. He turned around three programs that were floundering in Cleveland, Kansas City, San Diego, the Chargers at that time. And I know when I just right off what I think about is the old AFC West. I mean, shoot, you were in Seattle for all those years. He was in Kansas City. He was a major. He was a pain in the ass in the division. I mean, so much respect for Marty Schottenheimer. What comes to mind for you?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, a very sad day. I was lucky as a young kid in the NFL to have been around him a few times. Every time I think of Marty, I think of this one story. We were at the Combine in Indianapolis, and gosh, I don't know. It was probably late 80s at some point, but it was me, Abe Gibron, and a lot of people might not remember Abe Gibron,
wow,
but he's a historic name from the past who was kind of one of my mentors in the business, and Marty Schottenheimer, and there was a couple other guys, and you know, the Combine used to be 3 days, but by the end of the third day, there were very few people there watching the workouts because they had worn out, you know, people had left, and I remember the three of us and a couple other guys sitting in the bleachers in the Combine and watching the receivers work out the very last day, and I don't have any idea who the kid was, but he made a miraculous catch in the workouts in front of us. I mean, he dove and came up all skinned up. And I mean, it was crazy. The guy laid it all out there in a Combine workout. And everybody's kind of oohing and awing. And Marty, I remember, was sitting right in front of me. And he kind of turned around and he said, "Yeah, kid, it's too bad there's nobody here to see it." And so I always remember Marty with that dry sense of humor. And, you know, and thinking about, gosh, why? He saw things from a different light. And I mean, great in the AFC West. I think you can also add in there the Redskins, right? I mean, he had the Redskins at 9-7, I believe, a winning record. And I think Dan Snyder pulled the plug after that. So I remember him and John Snyder going to the Redskins together. So that was a stop that was a definite positive on his resume as well.
He did. He went 8-8 with Washington that year, and I'm just going to call it up here because I don't remember exactly what they were the year before. But I mean, I bet you it wasn't. Well, I guess they were 8-8 the year before, but that was hard to win there.
Yes, and that's I remember it being a positive for sure. His time there.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, 21 seasons as a head coach, and only two losing seasons the whole way. This is Marty Schottenheimer. I mean, you know, for better and worse. Probably known as a little bit stubborn, right? My way. He's a my way coach. We talk about these hirings, and even look at what the Chargers have been hiring recently, right? Guys who fit into their structure and hey, these guys aren't going to rock the boat. Well, let me tell you, Marty is the boat, okay?
Yeah, he would rock the boat. There's
Marty
no doubt about
the boat.
That.
So in Cleveland, folks, you know, remember, he turned them around, and they go to two straight AFC title games, okay? And they're kind of Super Bowl talk the next year. And it winds up being Marty's last year in Cleveland. He they had injuries. Quarterback got hurt, might have been running back hurt, and they had a disappointing year. And Lindy Infante was the top offensive coach in the league one of the time, and he had left as offensive coordinator, and so Marty took over, right? So Marty's going to do it. So end of the year, successful run, and the owner of the team, Art Modell, says, well, I don't want you to be the coordinator anymore. I want you to hire and get some help. And Marty Schottenheimer said, why don't you just hire a new coach and left? I mean, he's 45 years old. He's been to two straight AFC title games, and he just – well, you know what? I'll just not do that. And so Marty Schottenheimer leaves.
That's awesome.
He goes to Kansas City and turns them around his way, you know.
Right.
And they win for a better part of a decade. And then Marty doesn't get fired. I mean, Marty just – says, I'm done at one point. You know, they had a tough year and things kind of slipped out of control the last year, but he's gone. Shows up with the Chargers, and if you remember, the Chargers had the whole – coming out of that whole Ryan Leaf thing. I mean, it was a bad time.
It was a debacle,
A debacle. And, you know, they go through – they grind for a couple of years, but his last 3 years, he's like 35 and 13, something like that.
Wasn't it 14-2 the last year?
He's 14-2 last year and gets fired.
That's crazy. Can you imagine 14-2 nowadays and then firing the coach?
I mean, I don't think that's ever happened.
Oh, I'm positive it has. I don't have to look it up. Yeah,
and then Marty never coached again. And, you know, I mean, just a unique character in the history of the game with 200 career victories. So we want to pay our tribute to him And it is a sad day and a sad time, but some great memories.
No doubt.
Of Marty. As we pull it back into this week, Randy, I mean, we talk about quarterbacks probably too much, but it almost feels like it's not enough because, shoot, we just watched the Super Bowl where Tom Brady changed teams and they win the Super Bowl. We are now have already seen Jared Goff and Matt Stafford be traded. And the Carson Wentz situation is interesting, too. He hasn't been traded at the time of this taping, but who knows? I mean, that's a fluid
situation.
Yeah, it
sounds like he's going to. Yeah, that's right.
Sounds like he's going to. As we were sort of scheming on this, he brought up a great point. Let's evaluate the player. I mean, before we do this,
look at some film. Yeah.
Let's evaluate the player. So I think that's a critical component of this, right? If we're going to evaluate the trade or if there's going to be a trade or what it should be worth, you got to put on that film and know what you're looking at. And it's one of the things I enjoy having you on here for is that you know what you're looking at. So what were you looking at when you saw Carson Wentz?
Well, the whole thing has just kind of been a head shaker for me from start to finish. But I know the Eagles season was kind of like that. So the whole year you can probably put in a dumpster fire. But since this whole Carson Wentz trade deal has come out, I just keep saying, and I've said this to my friends in the business, it just doesn't make sense. There's just nothing about this that makes sense. And when I say not make sense, just the trading of Carson Wentz, it doesn't make sense. And the narrative throughout the media and most of the fandom is that, well, he doesn't want to be there now. He doesn't want to be there. Well, that really doesn't mean anything to me as a GM. That I'm going to do what's right for the Eagles, and eventually he's going to want to be here if he wants to get paid. You know, that's really what it comes down to. I think all these guys want to get paid, right? And he's only going to get paid by us unless we decide to send him somewhere else and let someone else pay him. So anyway, that whole... I know I'm on a lonely island here. I don't believe it makes sense to trade Carson Wentz, and I don't believe the Eagles think it makes sense. I think they're actually chumming the waters just for a whole nother set of information gathering exercises.
Interesting.
But, yeah. Anyway, interesting. We can get to that at some point. Yeah.
I think some of what sets us up is that Matthew Stafford asked to be out, and they said, "Okay, why don't you just go here?" That's the exception, though. Generally doesn't happen that way. Yet, in this case, there's been a lot of mixed signals sort of through the media, whether it's coming from Philly's camp or agent's camp or whatever. You have to sort through that. But when you put on the film to watch him as a player, what do you think? Can he be fixed?
Right. And that's really what I did. I wanted to see the 2017 Carson Wentz, how he compared to the 2020 Carson Wentz. So I watched both seasons a bunch of film on it, and really what it came down to me was, yes, I do think he can be fixed. I think he has some elite physical skills that actually showed their head this year as well. There's a lot of individual components that I think go into the makeup of a quarterback. And it was clear to me that he still has the physical skills. He still has the arm strength. He rehabbed his knee. I was chasing a little bit of a story that someone had told me, well, you know, I don't know if he rehabbed right from his knee. I think that knee's still bothering him. You know, his base is a lot wider, you know, now than it was back then. I don't think that's true. I didn't see that when I saw film. I saw physically a guy that can make all the throws. Still, I saw a guy that can stand in the pocket and get it out when he needs to get it out. What I saw was a guy that was bothered by the fog of war, so to speak. You know, it was all foggy for him. I saw trust broken in every way this year, and it was he didn't trust his offensive line. The minute he got the ball on his drop, he's already looking for rushers coming at him. So he saw ghosts there too. He didn't trust his receivers coming open at the time where they would normally be open. They weren't even there yet. So he'd run away from them and go to options other than the guys he was supposed to throw the ball to. And then I just saw a system that kind of let him down as well. So I didn't think the physical skills that I saw in 17 had all dissipated in 2020. Having said that, he played bad. I understand that he played bad. But I think there's a reason and ways that most of us, this isn't going to come as a surprise to people. It's been talked about so long, all season long. I just felt like there's enough there that, and then enough there to fix. And so I made a couple calls, and I think my counterparts in the NFL way more than not think he's a fixable commodity. So that part, you know, I think physically he's there. I think the things that you still build and characterize for making a good quarterback are still there. That part of it didn't make sense to me. In fact, I said, well, they can't be trading him because he's not a good player. He was a good player 2 short years ago. So it again sent me back to the same thing. The trust has been broken, no doubt, but I'm not ready to put it all on Carson Wentz. I think it was and we've talked about this. It was a terrible roster to start with. They got devastated by injuries. I don't think it was Doug Peterson's best year for sure. So there's a lot of issues there. And then when you talk about the full philosophical question of trading him, Howie Roseman, the GM there, has always erred on the side of, I'm going to overpay. I'm going to keep my guys till the end. I err on Deshaun Watson, Alshon Jeffries. These guys probably should have been gone a couple years ago. So that's been their motive there in the past. So he's always erred of, we're going to keep him. And now all of a sudden to pivot and say, we got to get rid of this guy who to me still is a young, viable option as a quarterback in the league for sure. It just doesn't make sense to me. And that's kind of where I come back to. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, being one of these teams, so Chicago's picking 20th and the Colts are picking 21st. Those are two teams that could use quarterbacks. They're sort of far along in their development of as a program just because their coaches have been there for a while and they've been either sniffing around the playoffs or in the playoffs without being able to get over the hump. And the idea is that if we can get a quarterback, we can get over the hump, right? If you were then one of those teams holding those picks, 20, 21, around there, are you giving up a first rounder for Carson Wentz?
Well, I think it makes clear sense for multiple teams, not only a team like Chicago, but probably a team like the Colts. Could even make sense to a team like San Francisco. You know, I don't think you're going to get a Carson Wentz picking late in the first round for sure. So, yeah, that part makes sense. I think there's a lot of moving parts here and a lot of reasons why he still doesn't get traded. And I know I'm alone on that island. I get it because everybody has really shoved the boat off the island and left me there. But I still have a hard time with that. I think the worst thing that can happen to Philly is they trade him for a first round pick and he goes somewhere else and leads them to the promised land. And I think that's a possibility if that happens. I don't know a lot of GMs that are willing to take that kind of a risk, you know, especially after this year when as a GM, if I'm being honest, I'm part of the problem in Philadelphia this year. That's the problem that I don't get. If they send Carson Wentz away, you've already fired the coach. Now, guess where everything is coming back on me? I'm not willing to do that and one, point fingers everywhere else, and two, put all the arrows back on me for the next year. I want that quarterback that gives me the best chance next year because I don't think they have the future quarterback on their roster. I know there's a lot have been written and said about Jalen Hurts. I just don't see him as an NFL viable playoff quarterback at this point. So,
what I wonder about, though, is, and I see this all every year when I do my quarterback tiers poll, is, you know, so Carson Wentz was picked in the first round, so it's going to take him 25 years of playing bad before people don't think he's good. You know what I mean? Yeah. They have their college evaluation on him.
Yeah.
And Jalen Hurts is going to be the classic guy that everyone in the league is going to say he can't throw it. He doesn't throw it well enough. He's not going to be. So he's going to have to play about 10 years of great football before anybody thinks he can play. Is there any danger in that in our evaluations of Wentz and Hurts and what it takes to even win in the NFL right now as opposed to even 10 years ago?
Well, the danger being what? I don't really understand what you're saying.
The danger being that we'll give Carson Wentz a million chances to show he's good because we can see some of the talent there. He hasn't been that. Has he been good? Has he been good? He's been good 1 year maybe when they had a great supporting cast around him. I'm playing a little devil's advocate here. But the next couple of years, okay. We've always heard about, is he a good leader of the team? Have we seen that? Does he fit in with the guys? Does that matter to you as a GM? No, we're just looking at the physicals there, so we got it, so somebody can fix it.
I just think it's easy to cast stones this year. Yeah. I do think, and we saw this happen, I don't know, multiple years ago in Seattle with Russell Wilson. Remember when all the rumors came out, well, Russell Wilson's not a good leader, you know, he's too tied to the front office, and we don't, you know, he's not one of us, you know. Well, that stuff happens when times are down, right? And I see that happening in a lot of places where they're starting to point fingers, and usually that comes after a bad season like Philly's had. I'm not willing to give up on the guy after this year. That's all I'm saying, and I think it's a mistake to do it. They may end up moving on from him, and that's fine. But I don't see all these things being a reason. And maybe that is because I'm a little more anchored on my evaluations. I'm anchored on what I saw at North Dakota State. I'm anchored on what I saw in 2016 and 17. Yep. And having searched for this for so long and now I found it, you know, I'm willing to hang in there with it. The other thing, the other side to that coin is Howie Roseman, the GM's not really an evaluator per se, right? He didn't come up the ranks as an evaluator. He came up as a cap guy. So he knows more about what he's being told as opposed to what he's seeing. And that doesn't mean that, you know, you can't become a good evaluator. You surely can. But I'm just saying we all come from different parts. We all believe different things. And sometimes we make decisions differently. That's all based on the information that we get.
So they're going to probably try to keep and hold a high price on Wentz, and that seems to have been the initial issue of there not being a trade early. They're asking for more than people want to give. So there could be a waiting game there. Who knows how that's going to play out. Meanwhile, there's other options. I mean, like a Sam Darnold. Do you think that Carson Wentz is just miles better than Sam Darnold, or would you be better off if you're Indy, better off if you can get Sam Darnold for less, or maybe Darnold's price is high too, would you be just as good going that route? I mean, is there a huge difference between those two guys if you're a GM trying to, you know, get the finishing touches on our team?
I think Wentz is further down the road. I just think you have a more fair body of work, even though I don't think either one, it's a fair body of work because of what's been around him and the job others have done. But in Darnold's case, I mean, he's learned. His offense at USC was, in my opinion, a little shaky. He goes there, it gets, you know, maybe even worse. In Sam Darnold's case, he's had to memorize or learn a new offense too often so that it's kind of held down his development as a player, if that makes any sense. He's just memorizing offenses. He's not working on his trade and getting to level 2 and level 3 of the evolution of playing that position because he's always learning something new. So that's a negative for him that he hasn't really had a chance yet because he hasn't been in a spot where he can get to year 2 or 3 and have an offense make sense to him so he can get to the next level. I do think Sam Darnold is going to end up somewhere and being better than what we've seen so far. It could be that it doesn't happen for a couple more years and it might have to be somewhere else. But I do think he'll be an option for some of these teams you're talking about later in the first round that know they can't get a quarterback. I see all these teams tied to, you know, if they can't get a veteran quarterback, they're going to draft one. Well, you just can't create quarterbacks in the draft. Personally, I see a couple. You know, I don't see six or seven, and there's six or seven teams being written and talked about that. Oh, they'll just draft one. Well, okay, they're just not there. They just don't grow on trees. So there may be two quarterbacks, in my opinion, 2.5, maybe 3 this year that end up being NFL starters. The rest is truly a crapshoot. So we'll see.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly. And so that could drive up the price for a Wentz or whoever these guys are that have at least shown something in the NFL before. And when deals happen, people may say, well, that's way too much. And it's like, well, you sort of need one, right? So
yeah.
I'm with you. I think that this Philly situation's weird. And I thought even when it's like, why were you hiring Nick Sirianni in the first place? Nothing against Nick Sirianni, but he had come from Indy and he had been around Frank Reich, and that was sort of the tie-in to Carson Wentz, that could at least make some sense of why he was hired to help out Wentz. Did they just do an independent search and decide, independent of anything with Carson Wentz, that that was the best coach for their team? It seems less likely, you know, right? Yeah, it seems like that tie-in would be part of it. So
I would think it'd have to be a tie-in to Carson Wentz. And let me just throw out this one other example, Mike, of talking about Carson Wentz and where he's come from. He kind of became a paint-by-numbers quarterback this year because of the system and the people around him. And he was already kind of heading to a masterpiece-type painter a couple years ago. So that's the difference. And now he's kind of taken a couple steps back to paint-by-numbers again. So as you evolve as a quarterback, you got to get through some of this stuff. And I just think there's enough on the other end, and we've seen enough on the other end to warrant giving this guy another chance.
There might have been a little finger painting last year, even at certain points.
Yeah, no doubt. But again, I'm not blaming it all on him.
Yeah.
But there's a fair amount too that, you know, we talked about it on the podcast, the hero ball and trying to make too much out of nothing. And let's face it, some of these quarterbacks, and Carson is like this, he misses open receivers. I'm not going to try to make that into something that it's not. But he also missed open receivers at North Dakota State. He missed them in 2017 too. So that's just part of his game. He will miss some open receivers. I go back to my evaluation on Eli Manning. Eli Manning at Ole Miss missed open receivers too. And he became a two-time Super Bowl quarterback. So you can't hit every throw all the time. And I think I'm a hard critic on these guys from a quarterbacking standpoint. They just do. And that's part of Carson's thing that we just have to sometimes overlook.
Yeah. Does the value of him, is it affected in your mind at all by the fact that he was benched during the year? As opposed to, you know, even though Goff got sideways with McVay, he was never really benched. Stafford wasn't benched. Does that affect in any way the value when you're going back and forth with teams?
It doesn't for me as a GM that's looking at him. I think there was enough going on in Philly that it makes sense. I think you start to get diminished value when, as an acquiring team, you can't connect the dots. I think everybody can connect the dots on this one and exactly what and who was to blame. I don't think that's going to hurt that part of the value evaluation.
Yeah, I think it's instructive too here. So we've talked for a few minutes about Carson Wentz and the trade and all this. And you and I haven't mentioned the salary cap one time. And it's because that's not ultimately that big of a deal when you really want to do something in the NFL. And I think we've seen this offseason. Oh, the cap charge of carrying Carson Wentz or Jared Goff or whoever it is. Cash is so much more important than the cap, and your owner's willingness to eat it in a deal is what determines whether you can do these deals. The fact that trading Carson Wentz and he's going to count $34 million on your cap doesn't matter if you're willing to take that, if you're willing to carry that. And so that's why I think a deal is possible, even though there are cap implications. So I always like to point that out because I think so much of the conversation among fans and media tends to be around the cap, and it's really not what's driving whether or not you do a deal, whether it's with Carson Wentz or anybody else.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Let's move on to the Hall of Fame, Randy. Busy weekend with the Super Bowl. Let's hit this quickly. I'm one of the voters on this thing, and Peyton Manning, Charles Woodson, Calvin Johnson, Alan Faneca, John Lynch were the five modern eras. There were three others in different categories. I'm always interested. A lot of times I will call people such as yourself or other evaluators and say, hey, you know, I'm trying to put together this ballot. What do you think? And a lot of times the Randy Muellers can't find five they'd put in. Why is the bar so high for you in getting into the Hall of Fame? You always think we put in too many.
Right. Well, I, again, and it's not to take anything from the guys that get in for sure, because they're all really good and were great for a long time. And I just think we all have different criteria. That's all.
Yeah.
And I think in my mind, and I've said this before, you have to dominate at your position for 8 to 10 years. That's always been my credentials for getting into the Hall of Fame. So I see that kind of waning nowadays, and I understand. I just think some of the old school guys, and I'll put myself into that category, for marketing reasons, we understand they have to put in five guys or they have to put in seven guys nowadays or whatever reason. And no one's really going to admit to that's why they have to do it. But it's obvious that that's why the numbers grow so fast. I just think the criteria is different in everybody's mind. So that's why everybody, and you know, you're one of the presenters, one of the voters. So, you know, that's the big thing for me is it's not that these guys all aren't great players, but it's supposed to be the greatest of the great, right? And that's a big statement to make when there's really no clear-cut criteria. In my mind, you might have a clear-cut criteria. I don't.
Yeah, I sort of feel that way, though, too. This is for the best of the best. I'd rather err on the side of the really dominant player. And that's why on this class, there's one guy I wanted to talk about that I get asked about a fair amount, which is Calvin Johnson. And to me, he was an easy pick to go in. And, you know, okay, he didn't play 15 years or whatever, but he had 8 or 10 years that were, you know, and for most of those years, he was pretty elite. He to me, physically, and just if we're playing him, there's a major game plan around him. Right. Is that the type of guy that you're talking about, as opposed to maybe somebody who played twice as long but was just very good?
Yes, I definitely agree with that, you know, analogy. I think Calvin Johnson is a no-brainer. And again, I know he played on the lesser side of the time allotment that we talked about, but I do know, and I agree with you, I think he dominated the game from his position for a period of time that, you know, sets him apart from 99.9% of the other guys to play that position. I think the position that these guys play is kind of a tough, unfair spot as well. Like, for example, the guards. You know, we always talk about tackles, it seems like. That's the preeminent position up front. But guards in general, you know, it's you can dominate your position at guard. They always used to say John Hand is the greatest guard ever. And I always used to say, well, he's still a guard. You know, so it's hard to make a difference from some of these positions. It's hard to make a difference as a guard. It just is. It's hard to make a difference as a fullback. And for years, it was hard to make a difference as a tight end, you know. So some of these positions paid the price, but it doesn't mean that these guys still aren't the best at what they did for a long period of time.
I know. I struggled when there's like a kicker up or something, you know, and you're like, well, you know, he made a few extra from 50 plus yards and everything else inside. That's the same as every other kicker, really, which is the way kickers are for the most part. The top kickers are all going to make all of their short ones and they're going to make most of their middle ones. And some of them are great from a long distance. And is that enough to say?
At least you do have some points or some way to evaluate, some quantitative value. I don't think a guard or a center, sometimes they have anything to evaluate unless you study the film. Unless you've been an evaluator of that guy for 10 or 12 years, how would you know? Again, a fan watching can't really appreciate the level of play that these guys, give every week because of the position they play. That's all. Yeah. It's hard.
And so this year we have a guard going in with Peyton Manning. You know, Peyton Manning made every difference. The entire organization, when he goes to Denver, right. revolves around him compared to somebody else who just fits into your lineup.
Yeah. Alan Faneca, nice people, sometimes it takes forever for these guys to get in because people just don't know how to quantitatively, how to evaluate them and put it in a, in a summed up sentence or two to get them in.
The Super Bowl, I was surprised that it was 31-9 Tampa Bay. I mean, I think I realized that if Tampa Bay was going to win, it was going to be that way. They were going to win on the lines. We thought there was going to be advantage there, but there's so much regard for Pat Mahomes and what they can do offensively. You thought that maybe they would win anyway. And shoot, Pat Mahomes went down swinging, didn't he? Some of those throws, were miraculous throws. But this is amazing, really, to me, just zooming out that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, they have good players. They haven't been to a playoff since 2007, Randy. They signed Tom Brady, they win the freaking Super Bowl. I mean, that's amazing to me. It's still sort of sinking in.
Yeah. Timing is everything, right? It's all about timing. You've got to be able to, go through the plate glass window at the right time, and that's what happened to these guys. And again, they have a really good team. Obviously, the timing of it all helped them and it's the Super Bowl, let's face it, has been dissected 100 million times since Sunday. So we're kind of jumping on the bandwagon late here, but I didn't see the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday that I saw all year long. I just felt like maybe they peaked a little early, but there was something missing with the Chiefs on Sunday. And maybe it was just the toll of the whole offseason. Maybe it was the toll of the things that had happened to them, the 48 hours with Andy's son and everything else. But I clearly saw a toll on the Chiefs, and it showed up in their legs. They dropped passes. I hadn't seen these guys drop passes like this all year long. So they just weren't connecting the dots right. On the other side, I saw Tampa as a team that not only peaked at the right time, you could kind of see where they were going, especially the last 3 weeks. And maybe that's in this COVID era. It just took longer to come together as a team. And I think no unit grew more. And this, throw in Buffalo, throw in all these other kind of things that we talked about all year. But no unit grew more for me in the last 3 weeks than the defense did of Tampa Bay. I thought their defense, after the Washington game, came together and got better and better and better. And it just, the timing was right for them to win that game. That's all I'm saying is timing was right. And yeah, Tom Brady, you got to give him credit for a million different things. But I felt like the defense won that game for Tampa, and it didn't really matter what happened other than they pressured enough of Pat Mahomes. I didn't think Pat Mahomes was his normal self, even with all the throws, like you mentioned. I think the toe bothered him. I mean, we already saw the stats on how much yards he's covered with his legs all during the game. I mean, how much running he had to do. I just think it, for some reason, the moment seemed heavy on the Chiefs and it was light on Tampa Bay. And I know that's great analysis, right? But it just seemed that way to me.
Yeah, this, I'm going to go way back. Some people may not remember. This reminds me of kind of like the first Ali Frazier fight, where maybe Muhammad Ali was the better fighter over the course of their careers, but mm-hmm. Joe Frazier that night was not going to be denied.
Yes.
You know
yes.
what I mean? And he yeah. was he was not the as classy of a boxer or whatever, but he was a street fighter that night. And right. and that's right. what Tampa Bay was. I mean, you can't fake the hunger thing. You talked about it all year with the desperation and all of that. And I thought, I was very impressed by Kansas City in the regular season to be able to win all the games except for one that they tried to win. They sat out in week 17, right. despite being the hunted, right? Despite in this sort of COVID environment where it was a grind almost to come to work after a while. And then I thought, okay, are they going to be vulnerable in the playoffs to Buffalo? Because Buffalo was sort of this rising team, right?
Yep.
And they didn't have the teeth on defense, Buffalo.
Right.
And Tampa Bay did, and they just looked like the hungrier, angrier, hit you in the mouth. They were the hitters in that game.
Doubt.
It really showed, and so you don't really know if that's going to happen going in, but hats off to them. That's unbelievable, really.
I saw, and again, and this is just watching on TV. It's hard to get a feel, but sometimes you can just see it in people's eyes, right? I thought that Tampa Bay came out, and like you said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face, right? And the Chiefs have come back from some deficits, so it's not like the first time they've been behind. But Tampa Bay laid it on them. The Chiefs kind of responded a little bit, but it was like you said, then Frazier came back again, yeah. And it kind of took out. It took them out. And I kind of felt like in their eyes and in their body language, they didn't have any more answers. It's like Tampa took their best punches after the initial, you know, quarter and a half. And Kansas City had nothing. And then the run that Leonard Fournette made for the touchdown to me was about as telling as you could. I saw defenders not giving everything they had. I saw defenders' body language sag. This is before he got in the end zone.
Decisions, or were you talking about?
I don't know about business decisions, but kind of like, oh man, you know, like we've given everything and it's not working, and, you know, and they were kind of out of ideas. It was kind of that body language is, oh man, we're out of ideas. This is it, you know.
Yep.
And there was a lot of game left still at that time. So I guess that's what I'm saying is I just felt that I didn't feel like it was the Chiefs and to credit Tampa Bay. And I'll just say this about Tampa: Bruce Arians has taken his fair amount of shots all year long. What he did with this team, I don't think he gets enough credit. I know Tom gets all the credit, and rightly so. But what Bruce Arians did with kind of setting his ego aside, kind of maybe he was the right guy to make this team come together. I just don't think people realize that his style, his personality, the way he leads, he ought to get credit for some of that. And I don't think he got enough credit to this point.
I wasn't sure whether he was going to earn that credit at midseason. Yeah. I think he earned it over the second half of the year. As
no doubt.
They were a reflection of him. The guy who goes in there and says, wait, these guys are favored? Who the F are they? They got to come beat us. You know what I mean? And they played with that Bruce Arians sort of bravado in the game. And so... Yeah. That was pretty cool. Any concerns for the Chiefs long-term, Randy, in terms of them being in the mix every year?
You know, not really, because look at it. They had offensive linemen missing. They had all kinds of stuff. I felt like they just kind of ran out of steam for whatever reason. I think the concern would be that they overreact. But knowing Andy Reid like I do, they're not going to upset the apple cart. They're going to stay to their plan. They'll stay true to it. You know, they're going to get their two tackles back. They're going to get the doctor back that opted out. They're going to get all these guys hopefully at some point back. So they're going to be fine. Like Pat Mahomes said, use this as a little bit of a motivating tool. I think it will help them get through the long grind in future years because they know what happened. And I'll say this, I keep going back to some of the things we talked about during the podcast over the course of the season. Tampa lost to these guys early in the season. I truly believe that when you lose that first game, you have a better chance to succeed in the next time around. And that hasn't always come true, but I thought it did in this case. Tampa had a chance to come up with a total new game plan. They had lost. They were, again, like you said, the hungrier because of that. A lot of reasons. That's why I just think it might have been a little perfect storm. And Tampa, again, I think Tampa deserved it, but they had a lot of things kind of lining up for them during this postseason, culminating with the game on Sunday.
Yeah, when I look at them in their long-term for Kansas City, I think they're so dynamic at the Kelce and Tyreek Hill positions that my only concern is that you can't be like that forever. I'm surprised Kelce's played this well this long. I mean, I think when he did his contract, it was a little bit of a hollow contract compared to some of the other ones. And I thought, well, you know, he's got another couple years here, but he looks great. So if he and Tyreek Hill can be like this another few years, I mean, I think they're going to be back. I think they're going to be right in it. But I think it's hard to have guys like that forever. And so when people start talking about can Mahomes approach Brady in 7 Super Bowls, that's hard. And these are precious opportunities missed.
No doubt. And they're also numbers that, again, I know it's easy for us to talk about them on the outside, but they're not talking about that on the inside. They're playing play by play. I think if the Chiefs do learn anything, it's that they're probably going to have to incorporate more of the running game in what they do on a week-to-week basis. Because I thought they left some yards on the field Super Bowl-wise running the ball. There was a little bit of a panic that didn't need to be. I just think they'll become a more running team and find ways to do things with their running game that they didn't this year.
It's time for Ask the GM.
All right, our Ask the GM question today is a good one, Randy. Do you think with the cap going down next year likely, and you know we don't know exactly how much, but it's certainly not going to go way up like it has been in the past, will it change the way GMs build their teams, and how so?
Well, I do think it's going to affect the way they do their job. And here's why I think that. The cap's not only going down this year, it's not going to go up much in the 2 years after that, too. Because I believe the deal they struck with the Players Association was that we're going to spread this out over 3 years. And the loss of revenues that they had this year in the NFL will be reflected next year's cap, but the following year and the following year as well. We may be looking at a cap 3 years from now that's, you know, $220 million, something like that. Well, that's not, you know, maybe it's $210. It's not going to be a lot different than what it was this past year at $200. So I do think when you commit long-term deals, you've really got to be cognizant of, you know, you've always had in the back of your mind, well, the cap's going to go up 10 or 12 million. So I got some room to play with. I can build in some raises going forward. If I was a GM and putting my contract team together on paper, I've got to be cognizant of the amount of raises that I build in, because I think that's a way in year two and three of post-COVID time where you can save some cap. And let's face it, if you can find a way to curtail some of the raises, that may be another player or two or three that you can add. So I do think your longer term focus on the cap, and you always have people on their game, and that's their job. But for example, we're talking about all these quarterbacks. Here's a question I think is going to be talked about. I don't really know the answer to it, but is it worth it to have a quarterback at $37, $38, $40 million of cap money on your books for the next 3 or 4 years? And can we afford to still build a team around him and with the cap not ever going up much? Because I don't think it's going to go up a ton the next 2 or 3 years. So that's a question that's going to have some discussion, I think, internally. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think one key variable is there's TV deal coming up, and that will affect the money and the amount of the cap. So
That could get him well.
Yeah, so most of those deals expire, run through the 2022 season. So I know they've been working on that. So if they get a huge round of funding, you know, that could affect the way things go. Then the other thing is, your thing about the paid quarterback is very interesting to me because obviously you should have one if he's a great player. But as we know, the hard part is when you have a win with quarterback and you're paying them like a win because of quarterback, right? That happens all the time, whether it's Kirk Cousins, who's a good pro quarterback, but when you're carrying that much, you know, then you got to make better choices elsewhere because you have fewer resources to go along. And part of me, Randy, on this Carson Wentz thing, okay, you raised the idea that Howie Roseman is not an evaluator first, okay? And they're always mentioned among the analytics teams, right? That's looking at it from more of a numbers standpoint and doing those evaluations. So one of those lines of thinking that kind of got popular among analytics-y type people in the last 10 years was, since this new CBA, was, having a quarterback on a rookie deal is a big advantage for building your roster, okay? So if you're Philadelphia and you're saying, you know, Carson Wentz is good. We think he's fixable, but we don't think he's really for a win because of guy. We think at his best, you can win with him, and we did. When we had everything right on the offensive line and Doug had everything going well, we had health, we had a good defense, we can win with him. But guess what, guys? Going forward, we don't have that. We can't afford to pay Carson Wentz as if he's Pat Mahomes when the rest of our roster is crap, frankly. So do they see their way out of this as, look, we got to get this $38 million, $35 million anchor off of our boat, because our boat is not the shiny, beautiful new boat that it was a few years ago. We can't win with Carson making this much, so we'll bite the bullet. We'll trade him somewhere. Shoot, maybe we trade him somewhere where he's not going to win at all, because I think Howie and these guys feel like they got to win the trade probably a little bit, right? They're going to be mindful about that, not having him go win a Super Bowl. But trade him somewhere. And, you know, Hurts, whether he's the answer or not, we're not going to pay $35 million a year for just a win with guy. What do you think of that?
Yeah, no, that's kind of what led me to down the road where I answered the way I did, because I do think the cap, you have to be cognizant of the caps in years two and three. Let's say that is part of the reason the Eagles do that. They bite the bullet, like you said, and take it all this year. Yeah. That's what that means for 2022 and 23. It's pretty good for them cap-wise. But they don't have a quarterback. But in this year, they already picked six. So I'm saying if they do something like this, they're going to have to, I think, parlay another move on top of that to get from 6 to 2 in the draft or something like that. Then you have your first contract quarterback, in my opinion. So I guess we're kind of saying the same thing. Maybe there's a master plan here that people need to look further beyond this year for.
With Hurts as just a nice little insurance policy that he could play some of the year if he needed to or whatever, and maybe he develops. You have at least a guy, and look, you don't think he's going to be the guy, but they may think he can at least be part of the equation with whoever they draft, and you move forward. And then the second year, you're really going with more cap room and
a lot more cap room.
Lot more cap room, and if Carson Wentz, you know, does fine somewhere else, it's someone they can say what they want, but we're building our team, you know?
Yep, I agree with you. I think that the structure of the cap the next 3 years, not just this year, is going to cause some discussions internally to happen around the league, just like the one you and I are having.
Yep, absolutely. Well, that's a good one there. Good discussion. Good podcast again this week, Randy, and it's been a great season. Really have enjoyed doing this, and hopefully we'll be continuing to do it, but with the season sort of winding down here, there's not going to be a game next week, and we'll see where it goes. So thank you, everyone, for coming along. It's been a great 2020 season heading in now to 2021.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.